You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Han. Today is Tuesday, February 28th, 2017. It's our second episode of the week. The Clippers are off again today after being off yesterday, after beating the Charlotte Hornets in Los Angeles on Sunday. They'll be back in action tomorrow night, hosting the Houston Rockets in what is probably the biggest game of the regular season so far. We'll get into that a little bit today, and we'll get into it a lot more in depth yesterday. But there's a few different things I want to talk about today, and I actually solicited some questions from people on Twitter just to kind of get through this episode, kind of bridging the gap in between talking about that Charlotte game yesterday and then talking about, you know, the Houston game, which I want to do more of in tomorrow's podcast. And the other good news is that as I record this Tuesday morning episode on Monday night, recording for Tuesday morning, I'm kind of at the end of like my third straight day of feeling pretty crummy and being sick, but I think my voice is at least most of the way back. So hopefully, I think yesterday's episode my voice might have sounded a little crummy. So hopefully it's a little better today. But now just getting into the swing of it with some questions from Twitter. JP Marino asked me, the Clippers fell from 15-1 odds to 60-1 odds to win the championship over the past couple weeks. Why, and are we still in the hunt? Well, you know, all of the stuff in Vegas, especially, it's based in like a statistical model, and then they adjust for public perception. So a big part of it is that the Clippers' chances to get the 3 seed probably dropped because they lost 2 games in a row. So a couple weeks ago, the Clippers were only 2 games behind the Rockets. Now, before the Rockets lost last night to the Pacers, the Clippers were 5 games behind. Now, if you're 5 games behind, you have to play the Warriors earlier. The earlier that you play the Warriors, who are the overwhelming favorite, the worse your chances are going to be. And so that's roughly more or less, I guess, how it goes. I wouldn't put any stock in Vegas odds as meaning anything. The only thing that changes is they don't put the odds based on what they think is going to happen. They put the odds based on what they think people are willing to bet on. It's not about predicting. It's about making money. For us, you know, or for someone who bets, it's about predicting correctly and making money. For Vegas, it's just about making money. It's about setting the line where you can make the most money off of it, not setting the line where it's going to be correct. And so because of that, I wouldn't really put too much weight in what any odds say at this point in time, except maybe that, you know, if you're really confident in this Clippers team, I hope you didn't place a bet 2 weeks ago and you place a bet now and it's down to 60-1 instead of being at 15-1. But yeah, I mean, my thing with that is that I don't think the Clippers are going to win the championship, although I would love for them to do it. And, you know, they're certainly an optimist in me, but to say, like, I'm going to stake some of my money on, yes, the Clippers are going to do this. I think it's more likely than not that they're not going to. So I think betting on anything that is 60-1 odds, it's just kind of weird because, yeah, there's a big jackpot, but you're going to lose almost every single time. But anyway, enough with that. Dylan DePretzel, at Dylan DePretzel on Twitter, asked, what do the Clippers have to do to beat the Rockets and get to the 3rd seed? Well, this is a great question, and it's a good time for the question, too, because I wrote a nice long column today on Clips Nation, clipsnation.com, my website. I'm the editor-in-chief. Talking about kind of how the final charge for the 3 seed is going to begin on Wednesday when the Clippers face off against the Rockets. At the time of the article, the Clippers were 5 losses behind the Rockets. The Rockets lost last night to the Indiana Pacers. Thanks, Indiana. And so now the Clippers are only 4 losses behind the Rockets. The Clippers play the Rockets twice. The Rockets play the Warriors twice. The Clippers don't play the Warriors again. So there are your 4 games. Now, the big thing, of course, is beating the Rockets in those 2 head-to-head games, especially because the Clippers haven't played great lately. But if the Clippers can get those 2 wins, it's starting to look like the door is really open. Because if the Clippers get the 2 wins against the Rockets, and the Rockets lose the 2 games to the Warriors, and in all the other games, the Clippers play the Rockets even, the teams will finish tied, and the Clippers will have the tiebreaker. Now, that's asking a lot. And the Rockets are certainly the heavy favorites, but it seems like the door is still open. And if the Clippers win this game on Wednesday, the door stays open. And if they can get hot through the next stretch of the schedule and the Rockets can drop just enough games, they can make it so that the team's next meeting in April is another huge game. So basically everything that they do, winning this huge game on Wednesday, getting hot, Houston dropping some games, and then winning through the last stretch of games. The Clippers' schedule kind of breaks down into the next 16 games. They have a 16-26 stretch, and then their last 7 games after this dense stretch of schedule. So Clippers have to be hot in both stretches. They've got to beat Houston on Wednesday. Houston has to drop some games. And if all of that goes right, when the Clippers get to the second-to-last game of the season against the Houston Rockets on April 10th, that they'll have a chance to say, if we win this game, we'll get the 3 seed. So everything that they're going to do for the next, 5 or 6 weeks that we're going to be overanalyzing like crazy, it's all going to be about, can we get to a point where that April game matters? So that's what they have to do to beat the Rockets and get to the 3 seed. They've got to basically be perfect and get to the point where that April game matters. And I'm going to go in more detail on tomorrow's podcast about what the schedule is basically looking like coming up. And there's some detail about that in the column on Clips Nation, clipsnation.com. So you can check that out if you want. But I want to kind of save that for when we talk about the Rockets game tomorrow. That's just a little bit of a preview. We'll get into it more tomorrow. Again, you can go read the article on Clips Nation. Eduardo Sanchez asks, if the Clippers and Matt Barnes were to reunite, why hasn't it happened yet? Or was it not a real thing to begin with, just us Clippers fans talking? Well, it definitely was just us Clippers fans talking, but that doesn't mean that it's not going to happen. Now, it was never, Matt Barnes to the Clippers was never a real thing. It was never rumored. It was never reported. Matt Barnes didn't send some tweet about it. The Clippers didn't make an announcement. Nothing happened. It was all us talking. But that doesn't mean that nothing is going to happen. We've talked about plenty of things that have ended up happening. Some stuff just makes sense. And it feels like Matt Barnes signing with the Clippers again makes sense. Now, that doesn't mean that the Clippers are going to end up signing him, even if it feels to us like it makes sense for them to sign him. And it doesn't mean like he's going to end up coming to the Clippers, even if we think, the Clippers are the obvious choice because, if we think the Clippers are the obvious choice because Matt Barnes played here before, or because Matt Barnes, his 2 sons live in Los Angeles, and we know, how important they are to him. But realistically, we don't know. And we can't know until something happens. And I think just because something hasn't happened yet doesn't mean that something isn't going to happen, in the sense that the Clippers are waiting to see who else gets bought out. The buyout season hasn't ended yet. It's just about to end. Players have to be bought out by March 1st in order to be able to sign with a team and play in the playoffs. So the Clippers don't have to sign Matt Barnes by March 1st, but a lot of teams seem to be waiting until March 1st to see exactly which players are going to be available. And this counts on two effects. First of all, if the Clippers are thinking of making a move, they want to see what the entire market is before they jump on a guy. And the Clippers aren't the only team biding their time. And Matt Barnes is, it's not like the Clippers are the only team he's interested in. So he might be also interested in the Rockets and the Warriors, but both of those teams might be biding their time too. And this is something that I did a little bit of research on and tweeted about earlier today. And I'm scrolling back and trying to find my tweet. Here it is. Of the 7 Western Conference teams, here's what they can offer buyout free agents. Golden State, San Antonio, the Clippers, and Memphis all only have the minimum to offer. Houston and Oklahoma City each have about $3 million in cap room, and Utah has $13 million in cap room. Now, I'm not sure what happens when a team signs a guy with cap room midseason, because if you sign a guy with an exception, it's prorated, but I don't know that cap room would necessarily be prorated. So they might be able to give him like $3 million to play, 20 games, which is a pretty sweet deal. But, and then looking at the East, only Cleveland is restricted to the minimum. So Boston, Washington, and Atlanta can all offer the room exception to a buyout guy, and Toronto can offer the biannual exception. The biannual exception is worth a little more than $2 million. The room exception is worth a little less than $3 million. But remember, these are prorated. So you're talking about a fourth of it, which is going to come out to about $550,000. And this isn't me doing the math and rounding. This is me like doing quick math in my head. But about $550,000 for the biannual exception, which is what Toronto can offer, about $550,000. And the other teams could probably offer more or less $725,000. The Clippers and all the other teams restricted to the minimum are offering somewhere in like the $225,000 vicinity for these last 20-ish games of the season. So that gives you an idea of the kind of advantage that these other teams have when they're going after buyout guys. And since these teams that have room, it's like Houston's trying to get Andrew Bogut. And presumably one of the reasons that Andrew Bogut is still, quote-unquote, deciding between Houston and Cleveland, and there are a couple other teams on his list, but one of the most attractive things about a team like Houston is that they have this room. And it's no accident that Houston dumped salary at the deadline to create a little bit of cap room. They knew it was going to come in handy when going after buyout guys. The Clippers don't have that advantage. Now, if Andrew Bogut decides to sign with the Cavaliers, Houston might turn around and say, okay, well, we couldn't get Bogut, now we want Matt Barnes. So Matt Barnes isn't going to be a Clipper then, because Houston's offering him $3 million and the Clippers are offering him $225,000. That's what it comes down to. Ultimately, is that, I don't think that just because nothing has happened as far as the Clippers and Matt Barnes go, that nothing will happen. I think it's just that we're waiting and seeing. And getting into that a little bit, a lot of the buyout market this year seems to have ended up being guards, which is unfortunate for the Clippers, in that the Clippers don't need guards. They really need less guards. You don't want to even be tempted to think about signing a guard, with a guy like Brandon Jennings, Jose Calderon, Darren Williams. The Clippers can't use them. The Clippers are already playing 5 guards, and you'd really only like to be playing 4, because none of them are really wings. None of them can play the small forward position as far as Chris Paul, J.J. Redick, Raymond Felton, Austin Rivers, and Jamal Crawford. Austin has been playing out of position at small forward, but none of them are real small forwards. None of them have the size to play that position. The two guys, and then you look at, there's been a couple bigs, but it's like Luis Scola isn't really an upgrade at this point. Andrew Bogut isn't going to consider the Clippers. Terrence Jones is looking for minutes, so he's not going to consider the Clippers because he'd be really limited as, like, best case scenario, the 10th man behind Blake Griffin. The two guys who I think really would be on the Clippers radar are, of course, Matt Barnes, because Matt Barnes can play both forward positions, which means he has a chance to be in the rotation as the 10th man at the backup power forward spot, which we've seen kind of rotate between Wesley Johnson, Brandon Bass, and Allen Anderson. But he also gives you a little bit more depth at small forward if you need to sub someone in for Luke Mbamute, if Luke Mbamute is in hurt or in foul trouble. And he brings, you know, something on the defensive side of the ball that really helps you off the bench. The Clippers don't have another small forward on the team besides Luke Mbamute, who you really feel comfortable defending good NBA wings. That could matter a lot in the playoffs. The other guy who I think should be on their radar is Omri Caspi. For some similar and some completely different reasons than Matt Barnes. Caspi also plays both forward positions, so he could play the power forward position off the bench as like the 10th man in the rotation, but he could also sub in for Luke Mbamute at small forward, but he doesn't bring defense like Matt Barnes does. He might be fine, but you definitely don't want to go like, okay, Omri, go guard Kevin Durant. Matt Barnes might be the kind of guy that you would put on a guy like Kevin Durant to try to get under his skin and push him around and bug him. But Caspi brings a lot as a shooter that Matt Barnes doesn't. So Matt Barnes was never a great shooter, even with the Clippers, and he was at his best with the Clippers. And he's struggled since leaving the team. It's hard to know what is because he's not in the Clippers' great offensive system, and what part of it is that he's aging and he's getting a little worse. He's going to turn 37 this spring. Omri Caspi is a 40% three-point shooter. He's going to come in and hit shots. And especially if the Clippers stagger, which I think they should do, and they play Caspi as a small ball four around DeAndre Jordan, and then they put Blake back in with the second unit, with Mo Spates stretching the floor for Blake, Caspi could really help a lot as that stretch four, kind of in a similar role that Paul Pierce played when he started in Blake Griffin's absence last season, except shooting way better and being way better all around than Paul Pierce was. Now, the catch with Caspi is that he's injured, and he's going to miss 4 to 6 weeks, and the playoffs are like 7 weeks away. So he won't really help much in the regular season, if at all. He'll be back for, at most, 7 to 10 games before the playoffs. And if there's a complication or he's not fully healthy, he might not contribute at all. But the risk is kind of low because it's just a minimum deal for the rest of the season. There's no long-term obligation or anything like that. So if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But I think he has the upside to really contribute. And I think Matt Barnes does too. So the Clippers go for one of them. Which one is it going to be? Do they go for both of them? Or do they stand pat and decide not to take on either player? I'm not sure. But I definitely wouldn't say... And both of these players, by the way, have already cleared waivers. So they can sign with whatever team they wish. I wouldn't go so far as to say that nothing's going to happen, but we haven't heard any indication of the Clippers being interested in any of these guys yet. Now, part of the problem, I think, for the Clippers compared to years past is that the Clippers have always had the right combination, sort of the right situation going on to attract buyout guys. They've always been a contender. They've always had really awful depth with huge openings on the bench, where you can say, hey, come get serious minutes and contribute on a playoff team. Doc Rivers is obviously a great recruiter, really good persuasive coach. He's respected by veterans, and they want to come play for him. And the Clippers are in Los Angeles, and people everyone wants to be in Los Angeles. If you have to go play someplace random for a few months in between getting cut by your old team and then signing a long-term contract in the summer, where do you want to go play for a few months? Do you want to go be in Cleveland or Los Angeles? Now, you might say Cleveland because of LeBron and because they just won the championship, but forget about that. Just the city. Everyone would rather be in Los Angeles. So that's an advantage for the Clippers, is the city, even if other things outweigh that. This year, there's a new factor introduced to that, as I discussed earlier, money, which isn't something that normally comes into play as far as buyout guys go. But because of the new salary cap and the huge cap jump, a lot of teams have above minimum salaries to offer to buyout guys, which is not normally the case, especially for good teams who are normally always capped out. And then this year, the Clippers situation has shifted a little bit. Doc Rivers is still persuasive, and the team is still in Los Angeles, but I'm not sure that they're really as esteemed as a contender as they have been in years past, partially because they've had issues, you know, advancing past the second round, quite frankly, and partially because the Warriors and Cavaliers have been so dominant in the last couple of years and appear to be en route to a third straight finals matchup that you might say no one is really a contender except the Warriors and the Cavaliers. The other reason the Clippers might have trouble attracting buyout guys is the same reason that I thought they had no chance of getting a guy like Terrence Jones, even though I kept on getting questions about him on Twitter, which is that the Clippers' depth is okay this year. They seem to have 9 guys pretty much cemented into playoff roles, meaning there are 9 guys who I can't really see them going through a playoff game without playing at least these 9 guys. So anyone who comes in is fighting to be the 10th man. I have a hard time seeing any of the names we've seen in free agency, and really the only legitimate targets are Matt Barnes and Omri Caspi. I have a hard time seeing either of those guys moving up to 9 on the depth chart. I think you've got the starting 5, Chris, JJ, Luke, Blake, DJ, and then off the bench, Raymond, Austin, Jamal, and Mo. Those 9 guys are going to play in every game no matter what. Anyone who comes in is competing to be 10th man or get an increased role if there's an injury or if they super catch fire in a series or are needed because of matchups or something unusual like that. But in general, they're coming in to be 10th man. That hasn't been the case in the past. When the Clippers got Glenn Davis a few years ago in buyout season, he was like the 8th man. He was the 3rd big. He was playing big minutes every night. They were asking him to play through injuries. He was so crucial to the team. Is there really anyone right now that you think would come into the Clippers and be above those 9 guys? I certainly don't think so. And that weakens their pitch as far as being a buyout landing spot. Now, moving on from buyout talk, because I know we're going to talk about this more in the, you know, about probably the next week as we see guys start getting snatched up. Matt Barnes is going to find a home. Omri Caspi might not because of his injury. Maybe no one is interested in him until the summer. But these are things we're going to be talking about, even if the Clippers don't make a move. And I definitely do want to get into a little bit the decision about who they're going to cut. If they make a move, who are they going to cut as far as Brandon Bass, Allen Anderson, Paul Pierce, Wesley Johnson? Those are basically the 4 candidates, assuming that they aren't going to cut one of the young guys. And I think all of them really have drawbacks. Cutting none of them, you say, oh, we can cut him and it doesn't hurt one way or another. And this isn't some like, oh, Paul Pierce helps in the locker room bullshit. It's like for financial reasons, it hurts the team. Now, in the, you know, it hurts their flexibility this summer and next year. It hurts their luxury tax bill to cut him. And is that worth it to add a guy for 20 games who might not even be in the rotation? I do want to get into that, but we're running out of time in today's episode. And there are a couple things from around the league that I want to discuss that I think are really interesting, even though it might not pertain so much to the Clippers. The first thing does pertain to the Clippers. It's the Houston Rockets. Houston lost last night, Monday night, to the Indiana Pacers. Now, I believe this is their second loss to the Indiana Pacers, which means that in this little race between the Clippers and the Rockets, the Pacers have handed each team two losses. The Pacers swept the season series against the Clippers, beating them twice earlier in the year. They've now swept the season series against the Rockets. It's kind of funny considering the Pacers themselves are like fluttering around 500 and kind of struggling, and here they have two wins against each of these two really good Western Conference teams. But it's definitely good for the Clippers because this puts the margin between the Clippers and the Rockets back at four. And those four that you kind of have earmarked are the two head-to-head games and the two Golden State Warrior games. Four is zero, basically. If you're talking about a scenario where the Clippers are going to get to the three seed, a four-loss difference is zero. The Clippers have to win the Wednesday game, so then three becomes zero because you've got the two Golden State Warrior games and the last Clipper game at the end. Three is now the new zero. Anything less than that starts giving you a little bit of margin for error. And that's not to say, you know, oh, the Clippers are going to have wiggle room, because it's going to be tight if they're going to do this. But it's to say that the Clippers aren't going to be perfect. In their 22 games after they play the Rockets, they are not going to go 22-0. They're going to lose at least two or three or four of those games. And the schedule is kind of soft and they might get really hot, but they're not going to go 22-0. So if three losses are the three losses we're assuming that they're going to get, and the Clippers are going to lose three more games, the Rockets need to lose three more games. So essentially, this Pacers game is like one of those games, but it's catching the Clippers up from being one game behind the Rockets, because they were five plus the four losses we're already counting, one game, to now being zero, because it's four, and there are four games we're still looking ahead to, the two Clippers games, the two Warriors games. If the Rockets keep on dropping games like this, it helps the Clippers tremendously, because now we don't even, you know, one game obviously doesn't matter a lot, but the Rockets also dropped two games to Miami within the last few weeks. And if they can lose games to teams like Denver, who they play three more times, and, you know, forget about the games they have left against like the Spurs and Thunder and Grizzlies and Jazz and Cavaliers, but if they keep losing games to teams like Indiana, and if they lose upcoming games, you know, after they play the Clippers, they have a patch of tough schedule, but if they're going to lose a game to Indiana, maybe they lose a game to Chicago, or maybe they even get upset by the Lakers, or they lose one of their two remaining games against the new-look New Orleans Pelicans. All that would be great for the Clippers, and I don't want to count these eggs before they hatch, but hey, Houston got like this insanely lucky, or not, you know, not totally lucky. They played well. It's not, but fluky, I guess. It's not lucky, it's fluky. That's a better word, because it wasn't luck, but it was kind of unusual. This fluky 20-2 run over the course of 22 games earlier in the season. They're 7-2 in games decided by 3 points or less. And statistically, it's been proven, like, no team is really better than another in games that come down to one possession. It's just a matter of kind of luck. So it's a coin flip. So they've tossed the quarter 9 times, and it's landed on the Houston Rockets logo side of the coin 7 of the 9 times. That's luck. And for a team that is built on some guys who really have a history of injury issues, including Eric Gordon and Ryan Anderson, they've stayed remarkably healthy. And that's not to wish injury on anyone. It's just to point out that they've had good fortune. And we especially know, you know, those of us who follow the Clippers and root for them, that good fortune with injury-prone players isn't necessarily something to be taken for granted. Because the last time the Clippers had kind of a good injury year, they were the best offensive team in the league. And since then, they've had a couple really, really injury-plagued seasons, including this one that has been no breeze with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin both missing a bunch of time. So with that being that, I think we're going to call it an episode as we pass over the 30-minute marker right now. We'll be back tomorrow, obviously on Wednesday, to talk about this huge Clippers-Rockets game and what it all means, because if the Clippers lose, it won't mean anything and we won't have, you know, nearly as much of a compelling storyline to discuss over the next month. So hopefully they win, because it will be great hashtag content. As always, thank you for listening. If you like the show, be sure to hit subscribe on iTunes. Be sure to leave a good review if you like the show. You can always hit me up on Twitter at LucasJHan. You can email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. If you want to chat Clippers, tweet at ClipsNationSBN. Go read about the Clippers and read my work, because I'm writing about buyout season and I'm writing about this Clippers-Rockets playoff chase. Read my work at ClipsNation.com. Follow Clips Nation on Facebook. Just type Clips Nation in the Facebook search bar. If I do any live videos, you can tune into those, because I do those on the Clips Nation Facebook from time to time, and they're kind of fun, and I talk about basketball just like I do on this podcast that you just listened to for 30 minutes, so you'd probably enjoy that too. With that being that, we'll have episodes for the rest of the week. We're here on Monday through Friday, and thanks for listening. This is Lucas Hand signing off for Locked On Clippers. We'll be right back.